The Natural Hat Trick with Luke Lipinski, Craig Morgan, and Jamie Eisner.
Welcome to episode 250-something of the Natural Hat Trick podcast alongside Craig Morgan,
the Natty Hattie,
and Jamie Eisner.
What's up?
I'm Luke Lipinski. Gentlemen, how we doing? We're on the football starts in like an hour. Craig, you've got Mitch Trubisky as your starting quarterback again.
Woo-hoo!
I feel good.
Hey, he won the battle. He won the battle for the starting quarterback job, so I feel good about it now.
That's encouraging. Jamie, I don't really know that you follow any teams in particular, but good luck to you this season.
Jamie, what's the Bears' record this year?
I think they'll be 8-8.
Yeah,
I don't think they're not terrible, but they'll be okay. I actually think Trubisky's better than Foles, but again, that's not a high bar to clear.
There you go.
They could have had Cam Newton, couldn't they?
They could have had a lot of people, but they chose to give up draft capital and $21 million of guaranteed money to trade it for a guy that had like four good games.
Instead of picking Patrick Mahomes.
Or Deshaun Watson. They were both there. Yeah, all right, let's get into hockey now that Craig is officially destroyed emotionally. We want to start with the Vancouver Canucks because we got to make sure we get to Jamie with this. Vancouver has since been eliminated since the last time we spoke, and the thoughts, at least around Vancouver, seems to be that this team has taken the step and next year they're winning the cup, which sounds like a case for nonlinear progression, Jamie.
It does. And, this is kind of a text thread conversation we had a little bit back about potential. Are the Canucks that like nonlinear progression team like Calgary was a few years ago, where everyone was kind of ready for them to take that next step forward? They showed some promise in the postseason and then they couldn't really get back over the hump for a while. There's a lot to like about this Canucks team. We've already talked about on the previous episode their stars, Pettersson, Horvat, Quinn Hughes. I mean, they have a lot of really, really good star power, but they don't have a ton of depth. And I look at the way that the Western Conference is still shaping up. Like the Golden Knights aren't going away. Neither are the Avalanche, and they've got money to spend. Like Edmonton should at least be at this level for a while, even if they don't have a ton of money. Calgary's Calgary. It's just like I look at the Canucks and I go, yeah, they can get hot, but are they on paper better than Vegas? Are they on paper better than Colorado? No. I think they're kind of in this middle class still, and there's a lot of teams in that middle class of the Western Conference, so I don't think there's going to be a huge difference between, what's going to be the sixth or seventh seed or a top wild card team, depending on if they're the third seed in the Pacific or a top wild card team, and the teams that just miss. I would not be shocked if this is a team that doesn't just automatically take that step forward next year, like everyone always assumes is going to happen with a young team.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think there's this assumption that the young players will get better and so the team will get better, but I don't think you can ever rely on that as your sole formula. But when you look at the bottom of the roster, they've got some bad contracts, and that's going to force some really tough decisions elsewhere. I mean, they want to keep Jacob Markstrom, so they're going to have to make decisions on guys like Vertanen and on Stetcher. And they've got some bad contracts, as I mentioned, like Sutter, like Roussel, like Ferland, like Erickson, like Beagle. They have a bunch of guys that are sort of hamstringing them for the short term, at least, on what else they can do to take the next step.
If we had any drops, if we had like a producer or somebody that would deliver on these drops, I definitely would drop one of the bad contracts in there.
But like right now, I know it's super early because, the season is still happening. But like next year, what are they, the sixth best team in the West right now as it stands? Seventh best team? That's fine. You can maybe get hot. Like whether maybe you're running with – maybe Demko can be that, that Binnington for them next year type of a player. But I think sometimes, and this goes for singular players as much as it does for teams, sometimes just being able to match what you did when you start to peak a little bit the following season is progression. And I think a lot of times that gets lost. Nonlinear progression. Everybody always thinks you have to take these major steps forward. I just don't see how they're going to do that. And I also don't see as a team in a more traditional, even though it's not really going to be because of the start time, but a more traditional season than what this has become, how they're going to be anything more than a team that maybe is right back into that kind of second round conversation next year, but that's probably as far as they go.
Jamie, what would your nonlinear progression drop sound like? Would it be like, I kind of feel like it should be space agey, maybe like, Stephen Hawking's voice or something. I don't know. What would it sound
maybe,
like?
Maybe, or it could be like almost like an old school video game ish, like do, 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 Magic just happened, Luke. Magic.
Podcast magic. I thought you were going to say the words in like your I'm from Cole Harbor voice.
No. I think we have to go different there.
Everybody, by the way, from Cole Harbor is back in Cole Harbor now. It's kind of sad. Was there
a like more to be in Cole Harbor right now?
And well, yeah. Was there a more sad image from these playoffs than the look on Nathan MacKinnon's face when Dallas scored the game winner in Game 7? He seemed genuinely shocked.
Maybe on Gary Bettman's face. or the NBC execs.
Yeah, that's true, too. The last thing they want is a Dallas Islanders Stanley Cup, although they're not going to get one.
They're not going to get it, but...
You know, to Jamie's point, though, I know that we bring up this concept a lot. I mean, Jamie's been talking about this for 5 years now. But, I mean, just think about it logically. If teams were going to take the next step every year, then we would already know who's going to win the Stanley Cup next year and the year after. There's going to be regression. Other teams are getting better. And to answer your question of where they are in the Western Conference, yeah, probably 5 or 6 with a little bit of upside because of guys like Pettersson and Besser and Hughes and potentially Demko. I mean, he could be a bit of a game changer. Yes. But they got thoroughly outplayed in 6 of those 7 games against Vegas. They were lucky. Maybe lucky is not the right word, but they were fortunate to be there in Game 7 at all.
Yeah, and let's be careful about anointing Thatcher Demko as in a trophy finalist at this point based off of a few games. It doesn't mean it's carrying over, but that was fun to watch.
Yeah, and look, we're not saying that they can't. It's just that don't automatically assume they will. And I think that's the argument that I know gets kind of lost on the hardcore fans of any team, and particularly those north of the U.S. border. But their path of progression now, you have to be a conference finalist, right? Like that was what you would consider just on the surface, not us, but on the surface, where this is a team that's competing in the Final Four next year. I don't see that happening. Like, I really don't. I mean, they could finish third in the Pacific. Sure. Maybe they get hot, but I don't think, you know, to me, just getting back to second round next year and seeing a little bit of statistical progression, particularly from those top forwards, and then seeing some defensive progression from Quinn Hughes should be what you want going forward. And it might not result in a deeper playoff run, but seeing now those little incremental progressions from those top young players and maybe a full season of Demko being good, not necessarily great, but good. I think those are all very positive signs, even if they don't end up pushing them an extra round or two in the postseason. That doesn't make the season a failure. I think that's the other part of nonlinear progression that they talked about, is that it's not as simple as, well, they got the second round this year, so they must get to the third round this next year, and if they don't, then they failed. Well, not necessarily.
When I update the Natty Hattie playoff standings later, I'll be sure to include a bonus note that says Jamie is picking the Canucks 12th in the West next season. Just for clarity for our readers, because that's basically what he said.
It worked for Colorado. The problem with the playoff standings is we're all picking the same teams. And, you know, I don't want to pat us all on the back here too soon, but we all picked Vegas and Tampa to meet in the Stanley Cup, I believe, back in like November. And here we are. I mean, look, Vegas is even with Dallas.
We did more than a year ago when we started before the regular season, before the world changed. That was at least two of our three, if not all three of us. And all of us had at least one of those teams in. We stuck with it after the shutdown or the pause.
Oh, the pause. I like that. That's more.
But, I mean, that was the original picks, which would be very interesting that after all of that, if that were to happen, there's still a ways to go to get there. But after everything that this unprecedented season has been, that we might still get to that point in the Stanley Cup Finals with that matchup.
Man, I don't know that we're that far. I mean, we're obviously far on the Western Conference with Vegas and Dallas tied as we record this in that series. But Tampa looks. Can you imagine if Tampa had Steven Stamkos?
Mm-mm.
To bring this full circle all the way back to like episode 1, where Jamie and I were talking about Stamkos. Yeah. But I mean,
we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, it's a shame.
Jamie, did you give us your non-linear progression teams for next year? Is it just
Vancouver? No? Because we got into the Vancouver conversation. I think Philadelphia is one that is high on my list as a potential option, because they were so hot right before the break, and they were really good in that little round robin round, but there were some holes in that team's game that we saw displayed later in the postseason. Carter Hart was great at times, but also not so great at times. I think that's a team, just particularly because of the fan base of that city, that the expectations are going to go through the roof next year, and might have a really hard time matching them, especially when the East is still going to be really formidable. Maybe not that division as much, but the actual conference will be. So maybe that's their saving grace, is that, you know, who's going to really knock them out in the first couple of rounds in the traditional playoff format in the Metro. But
I'm betting on flying objects from the stands to knock them out.
Maybe. And then Hurricanes could be another one.
Fans. Hurricanes, yeah. Really?
Good point.
Well, the Hurricanes for me is because I think it feels like they're kind of flatlining a bit as this good team that's just never going to be good enough to truly be a cup contender. And maybe that, I don't know if that's the traditional sense of nonlinear progression, but I think we keep waiting for their just overwhelming possession numbers and their young guys to turn into a playoff juggernaut. And I'm not sure that they're ever going to be as currently constructed, particularly with their goaltending situation, which is fine, but nothing more than that, a team that is truly a cup contender versus a trendy first round upset or first round winner in the series, and they kind of start to bow out in the next couple rounds.
Another thing to watch with Carolina is the financial situation. We've talked a lot about how tough it has been on the Coyotes. Carolina is another market that could feel the pinch a lot from COVID, and we'll see how that impacts their offseason.
It would help if they didn't have to keep playing Boston in the playoffs.
yes.
Jamie, before you go, because Jamie has to get his eyebrows threaded, so I don't want to keep him too long here, but I don't want to cause a glitch in the matrix, but is there such thing as nonlinear regression too?
I think so. I think it's more of a situation where everybody just assumes a team will be worse than they were last year, and just because. I don't know if there's really a team necessarily in that category. Like, is there a team right now that everybody, maybe Pittsburgh, because I don't know, I hang around you and nobody is more negative about the Penguins than Luke Lipinski, but that might be the team that everybody just expects to just completely fall off a cliff. And until I see, as long as they've got Crosby and Malkin, they're going to be a playoff team. They're going to flirt with 100 points. I know that's not the mark and it's not the bar in Pittsburgh anymore, but I think that their demise is going to get a little bit overblown. I think probably compared to the rest of the league. I don't really see another team that's going to be, like crucified to that level. Maybe St. Louis, but I think a lot of that's probably unfair as well. But I don't really see another team. Do you? Is there another team that stands out to you that everybody's going to, that's probably like a surefire playoff team that everybody's just going to completely jump off the wagon?
I don't know. No, probably not. I can't see Boston taking a major step backward either, but I'm starting to think that the window for them has closed.
I guess maybe Winnipeg or Florida, maybe, but that's not really dramatic enough.
No, and Florida's got to get there. They were the 10 seed, and their goaltending was awful.
Yeah.
Luckily, they only spent $10 million a year on it. So I don't know.
Deeper than Montreal.
Like, well, and one of the teams that, going back to the potential nonlinear progression, and one that kind of scares me a little bit, I think we're going to see, and I'm probably going to be among the people that buy into the hype, a lot of New York Rangers love going into next year. If there's one team that was outside of the top eight in any either conference that everyone's going to start to really love, but we still need to see more from, that could be the team, because that's the expectation, is they're going to make this leap. They're going to be competitive, especially in a metro that I don't think is going to scare a lot of people, particularly if they're down on Pittsburgh. I think a lot of people are going to be like, Columbus isn't going to do it again. I just, that scares me, because there's a lot of, I don't know if there is a great team in the metro right now, but there are a lot of really solid teams in front of them, and the Islanders and Columbus and Carolina and Pittsburgh and Philly and Washington. That's going to be tough to crack the top three. It really is. And I think everybody's, because of where their draft slot is, because of how great Artemi Panarin was and Mikhail Zibanejad was and Chesterton was in his brief time there, I think that there's going to be high expectations for that team before they're necessarily ready to commit, particularly on that blue line.
Yeah, I don't see it up the middle either, other than Zibanejad. I'm not a Ranger fan. I don't think that's going to be a great team anytime soon. Are you actually leaving us, or is Luke just trying to get rid of you?
No, I can stay for a few more minutes. I can stay for one more segment here.
Sorry, Luke.
I was trying not to have any breaks in the conversation, so he couldn't leave. So here, Jamie, since you're leaving, it's your choice. Do you want to talk Coach of the Year, or do you want to talk Coyotes GM search?
Let's do Coach of the Year. I think Craig is more equipped to talk about the GM search for longer than I am.
What does Craig know about the Coyotes? Bruce Cassidy wins the Jack Adams. Look, it's not like he did a bad job this year. Obviously, Boston had the best record, but man, I would not have had him probably in my top five.
Same. I completely agree. First of all, I don't know if you guys follow Allison Lucan, but she does these analyses every year where she measures the impact of a coach on a team. How much? It's basically wins over expected, and he's not in the top 10. And I know that's just one formula, but when you look at that lineup, look at the roster that they have. Was this really unexpected, what the Bruins did? I mean, and I know it's unfair to, sometimes coaches of great teams don't get enough credit, but I just don't see it here. I don't get this one at all.
To me, I look at Coach of the Year as like a pseudo war stat, like a wins above replacement.
Right.
Or it's like wins above, I should say maybe it's WAH, wins above expectations. Not Patrick WAH, but WAE.
Sounds and more hockey-like.
I think when you can be a coach of a good team and win the award if that good team is great. You know, if you are just dominating opponents, then I think you get that. But I also think you get hurt a little bit just because if you have a really good team and perform really well, it's tough to find out how much the coach deserves there. And to me, him finishing first over, I think our top three when we talked about Tippett, we talked about Sullivan, Tortorella.
Even Alain Vigneault.
Vigneault in Philly. I was surprised to see this. I really was. And I was surprised to see Sullivan outside the top five. I was surprised to see Tippett at seven, which I don't understand. Again, this goes back to conflicting narratives. So, you know, the Oilers were terrible, right? Like, we all watch the Oilers be terrible forever. And then, oh, no, I don't know if Tippett can coach offense. And he comes in. Leon Draisaitl has the best year in the league. McDavid was great. This team played really well. So now he doesn't get credit for it. Like he stifles offense or creates offense, but doesn't get credit for it either way. Like, I just don't get it. I don't get this voting. Again, Cassie's a good coach. It's not like it's a travesty of justice, but I don't understand. I don't understand this voting at all. Like,
as I said to you, it's because it's broadcasters, people like Luke Lipinski voting.
People like Luke.
I had no vote.
The sixth and seventh coaches on here probably were both top four at worst in my mind. Like I don't get it.
Like you said, it's not a knock on Cassidy, but for me, you know, when you don't just automatically go with the team that had the best record, you can lean on that if there aren't really any other impressive candidates, but you just rattle off quite a few of them. I mean, Vigneault, as much as it pains me to say it, with Philadelphia, and he did finish second. Jared Bednar with Colorado. I mean, Tortorella, I think, should have won, considering he was basically doing this with half of a roster from last year. I probably would have had Dave Tippett second. And as weird as it is to say, with the way Mike Sullivan had the Penguins perform against Montreal and whatever that was, I mean, throughout the regular season, he didn't have any of his players, and they still were a 100-point team, and they were close. You know, they were on that pace. So I just – it's like you said, not a knock on Cassidy, but I'm really surprised he was even in the top three at least.
Yeah. What do you guys think about Mike Babcock going to the Capitals?
I think that continues their long line of poor decisions since they let Barry Trotz walk. this was so interesting because I know we talked about this again, the whole Mike Babcock stuff in Toronto feels like 18 years ago at this point because of everything really that has gone on in the entire world, including the sports world. But I remember talking about and I don't remember what we said, but I think we were all very cautious about, it seems like right now that he's untouchable, but he absolutely is going to get another job at some point. And it just, I'm a little surprised that it's pops possibly the next season. Although even though it doesn't feel like it's been only a year since this stuff was happening, but look, Mike Babcock has proven that he can be a good coach years ago. I'm not sure he's proven he can be a good coach recently. And I'm not sure he is the person, given all of the reports that happened around the time of his firing, that he's a person you want leading your team now. I don't know. I don't like the idea, but this is the NHL coaching ring is a lot like the NHL GM ring. They just kind of recycle the same five or six names every season. Every once in a while, you'll get someone pop up from the AHL, but more often than not, it's they just kind of have these retreads more so than the other major leagues.
Is Mike Babcock overrated as a coach?
At this point, he is. I don't think what he did in the past was overrated. I think at this point, his ability to then carry that forward has been. Like, I don't think you're getting – it feels like almost like an over-the-hill player that you appreciate what they accomplished before, but you know you're not getting that player now. I think that's what's happening here.
If I remember correctly, the last playoff series he won was in 2013. I think that's right.
It sounds about right.
Wow, that – seems like forever ago. I think there's something to what Jamie just said, though, of, you know, all the stuff that came out about him, what that was 7-8 months ago, 9 months ago, maybe it does feel like it was 4 years ago. And I think Washington probably looks around and says, we have Ovechkin for how much longer? I mean, that is a team that should still be a threat to win the Stanley Cup each and every year. And they haven't been since they won it a couple years ago. I mean, they've bowed out instantly each of the last 2 years. So I do wonder if they look around. They're the only team looking for a coach at this exact moment. And they're just like, well, there's a name. Let's get him. But I mean, I could see him making them better. And in that sense, I certainly hope they don't get him. But I'm kind of with you guys. And I do think we're seeing it more and more. When you see teams take a chance on a newer coach, those teams have had more success or more unexpected success over the last couple of years. They just don't do it very often.
Yeah.
All right. The draft is set for October 6th and 7th. Free agency is set for October 9th. I read the very depressing story that Craig sent us about next season that was written by Greg Wyshynski and it was Emily Kaplan, right, from ESPN?
Yep.
They went through and they talked to a lot of people around the league, just sort of paint a picture for what next season is going to look like. We don't know when it's going to start. The original target date was December 1st. There was a lot in there to unpack, but I will just throw this at you guys. Do you see any chance that we are seeing hockey in a bubble to start a bubble or four bubbles to start next season?
I can't see it happening because I don't think the PA is going to agree to it. I can't see these guys being away from their families that long. Look, you can see what's happening right now. They still don't have approval for the families to join the players in the Edmonton bubble for the conference final. I know a lot of guys who are really upset about being away from their families that long. You're going to ask them to do it for a season? No way. I can't see it happening. They have to find a way to do this in the home arenas. And to be blunt with a lot of these smaller market teams, they got to find a way to get some fans in the seats because teams like the Coyotes really need fans. I mean, this is a team that's already losing money. If you take fans out of the equation next season, and they still got money going out for salaries and everything. I mean, $20 to $25 million in losses could balloon up to $80 million really quickly, and this franchise could be in trouble.
Yeah, and I think we've heard a lot of reports coming out of the NBA bubble about how frustrated a lot of the players are there. As much as that's been lauded and they haven't had any active cases and all of that, they're not happy with that environment. I think everybody, and Craig's alluded to, there's a lot in the NHL community that apparently feel the same way. And I think when you have that information, it's okay over the short term, like what MLB is probably end up doing for their postseason of putting the postseason teams in a bubble. You're talking some teams will be there for a week, some teams will be there for a month, but I can't see them doing that over the full season. I think it's going to have to be something where, you know, you're playing at your home arenas and they're traveling. The fan component is going to be interesting. I think a lot of that's going to have to be state by state, city by city. I mean, as we speak right now, there's some weirdness for the NFL where the Saints have not been approved as of this moment to play the game that they have on Sunday against Tampa Bay. So we're going to, now there will be some more time between now and the start of the season, but you're going to see different areas. Like you're seeing the NFL, there are going to be some teams that have fans, some teams that don't, some teams that have 2,000 fans, some teams that are allowed to have 7,000 or 8,000 fans in NHL arenas. So it's not going to be normal. They're going to have to find some new normal in the short term, but I cannot see them having a season long bubble. I don't think the players would agree to it. Like when that was brought up to even MLB players for like 60% of a season plus postseason, they said, absolutely not. I just cannot see that happening.
And I don't see the season starting before January. I can't believe it's going to happen before January.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And at that point, you're looking at a shorter season, probably 70-ish games. It tends to be the baseline. I mean, if you're telling me, okay, we're going to tell the players that they're going to be in a bubble for a month, and then there is either going to be a break before they go into a different bubble, or we're switching over at that point. Like, if you're going to put them in the bubble for a couple weeks to start the season, knowing that at a certain point you're going to go back to relatively normal, then I could see it maybe happening. But at that point, why not just wait a few more weeks? Any more than that, I'm with you guys. The NHL bubble could not have gone any better than it has. And it's still not realistic for a full season next year. It just isn't. Yeah. Should we get into the GM stuff here?
Depends. Jamie, do you need to go?
Yeah, I'm going to head out.
All right. Yeah. I really thought Jamie was just going to like sign off and never say anything.
So did I. But
wait,
then you
Chad,
guys paused.
He sent us a message.
I think it's 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were stopping there. There was a long pause there. I hope you leave this all in too. I hope that everybody can hear this.
Not only am I going to leave it all in, I'm going to turn down the volume on the entire rest of the podcast except this 1 second right here, and I'm going to play this louder. Nice. Jamie, any parting thoughts before you leave here? Any knowledge you'd like to drop?
Are you in fact getting your eyebrows weeped?
I'm not okay. Doing anything to my eyebrows. Okay. I'm perfectly content with their current state. Now, I guess my only thought is that I am very much looking forward to hopefully a Vegas-Tampa final. And I think that would just be really fun to watch. And we're close to getting that, but not quite there yet. But we'll see. I don't know if we're going to do another hopefully we'll be doing another Natty Hattie before the start of the Stanley Cup final. So we'll see. We'll see how quickly some of these series go, because Dallas is making it tough. That might actually be a longer series than Vegas or anybody else hopes for.
What were your two predictions before we go? Because I don't think we've said those on the air yet.
Oh, for these series?
For these rounds, yeah.
I think I picked both Vegas and Tampa in six, if I'm not mistaken. Craig can fact check me on that. It's in his text.
Yeah, but I'll put it out later today. Yeah, I took I think I took Tampa in six and Vegas in seven.
Yeah, I think that's what I did too. All right. Thanks, Jamie. Enjoy football.
Bye.
See you, Jamie.
All right. Now that Jamie's gone, let's get into the important stuff. Craig, let's get into this Coyotes GM search, because on the one hand, it's not something you want to rush, and I understand that. It's arguably the most important position in your organization right now with everything going on. But on the other hand, we just looked at the dates. I mean, the draft and free agency are now less than 2 months away. You don't want to bring your GM in 2 weeks before that.
Yeah, well, less than – it's we're inside 4 weeks now, right, for –
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Next month. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they really need to hurry up.
Yeah. It's less than a month till the draft, less than 4 weeks till the draft, and about 4 weeks until free agency opens. So yeah, it'd be a good idea to bring someone in. My understanding right now is that they are finishing up the first round of interviews this week. I think the last first round interviews will be on Friday, and then they'll whittle it to, you know, whoever the finalists, the two or three finalists are, and hopefully make a decision next week. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, I've reported a lot of names. I reported that Pierre Maguire, the only one that I know of that has had a second interview, is now out of the running. Peter Chiarelli is also out of the running. So clearly the Coyotes are making some progress.
I love the reaction to the Pierre Maguire news when you put that out there on Twitter. Some of it a little mean.
I felt badly for Pierre, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The one thing I would say is, as I loved the, I don't know whose comment it was back to you, but I had been thinking the same thing, and it's just something I couldn't tweet, but if the Coyotes took Pierre Maguire on as their GM, they get their draft picks back, right? They get their second rounder this year and their first
condition.
They should at least get that. You can't do both. Well, it really is October next month.
Yes, it is. It's crazy, isn't it? Oh. Which means we're going to have good weather soon. So there's a lot to look forward to. Pierre Maguire and Peter Chiarelli will not be the GM of the Coyotes, and October is coming. So,
which one do you think makes Coyotes fans happier to hear, that it's not Chiarelli or that it's not Maguire? Because for me, it's actually Chiarelli. I'm not like I think Maguire would be good as a GM, but I already know Chiarelli isn't good as a GM.
That's a poll question, I think.
Yeah, okay, I'll put that out. Are you looking for anything specific? Do you have any idea, like, necessarily what they are looking for in a GM at this point?
Look, I've said all along that they got to get this right. Obviously, this is a critical hire for their future. But I don't, on the other hand, get the sense that they want to spend big money on a GM. So I don't think candidates like Ron Hextall and Ray Shearer are going to get a serious look. And as far as I know, they haven't even been contacted, which at this point makes you think they're not in the running. There's always pieces of information that don't leak out, but I don't think either one of them has been contacted. So I don't see them in the running. I could see this going to, you know, an assistant GM from a successful club. I mentioned some of the names that are out there, like Bill Armstrong or Chris McFarlane or Jason Karmanos. Those are some of the names that I mentioned. Even Mike Fuda is a name that I mentioned before from the Kings. But they could also decide to stay in-house with Steve Sullivan, who obviously would not cost them more money, and money is really an issue with the Coyotes right now. Or maybe they turn to someone like Sean Burke, who knows this organization really well and has some managerial experience with Team Canada.
Yeah, you know, it's not like you have to spend money to get a good GM. It's entirely possible that a guy like Sean Burke or a guy like Steve Sullivan ends up being the right choice. I don't want to see them, especially, you know, with everything going on, every team has to consider money unless you're like the Maple Leafs right now to a certain extent. I don't want to see them hire a guy just because he's a cheap option, because like you said, and you know, it's undeniable. This is an extremely important position for any team, but especially for a team right now that's at a crossroads. So I don't want to see them go cheap because they have to. But at the same time, I don't want to see them go out and be like, well, this guy's a big name and he costs a lot of money, so that means he's a good GM and we'll spend on him. It's possible they end up with the right guy without spending a lot of money. I wouldn't have minded if they interviewed Shiro and Hextall, though, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you bring them in just to hear their thoughts, right? It might inform your decision, so I don't think it's a bad thing. But, yeah, listen, some of those names that I just mentioned, though, if it's Bill Armstrong or if it's if it's Chris McFarland or even a name that I've heard, but I haven't confirmed this yet. So I don't want anyone to think that he's definitely a candidate yet. Tampa's Al Murray is another one. If they make one of those hires, at least you say, okay, they're turning to successful organizations and guys who've done good work. So there's some sense to this. You really never know until one of these guys steps into the chair if he's going to be good at the job, right? It's I know these people, a lot of people like to throw out names and say, oh, this guy would be a great hire. We don't know. We don't know until they're in that position and you work within the parameters of a new organization and whatever restrictions they place upon you. But those guys, at least, you can see some logical sense to making those choices.
Yeah, and I would just set you up here to clear this up. If people look and they say, okay, well, Shiro and Hextall, they're not interested in that job. Like, there's not a lot. What, is there one GM job open in the NHL right now? If you want to be a GM, you're interested in the job. If it's not going to be Shiro and Hextall, it's because the Coyotes just didn't want to go down that path.
My understanding is both are interested in the job.
Yeah. Anything else on this, or can we jump? I love this story of Bobby Ryan winning the Masterton. Oh. Are we good to go there? I actually reread you put the Athletic story from, it was like back in February, which I had read back then, but I reread it again today. Just, I mean, Bobby Ryan has had a tough life before he dealt with alcohol and everything. And the start of his career was remarkable when he was, what was the line in Anaheim? Was it Getzlaff, Perry, and Ryan? Sometimes they put that line together. I mean, that was a dangerous line. His career has dropped off and everything, but to see him come back, I mean, certainly a worthy winner of that award.
Yeah, no question about it. And when he was so honest with the struggle he went through, and that's the part, you know, sometimes these guys go through these tough situations in their lives and you get bits and pieces. So you get a sense of the story, but I mean, he was just so blunt and open about what he experienced. And that was just powerful to me. And I know some people were looking at maybe some other candidates, but to me, Bobby Ryan was the most powerful story, and he got my vote. Actually, I voted in this one, and he was my number one vote.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of reasons why I wish the NHL awards had happened this year, but Bobby Ryan would have certainly been one of those people that would have been interesting to talk to when they do the media availability the day before or whatever. So, you know, good to see him win that. And like you said, the honesty, you know, everybody likes a comeback. It's when you're, and no, I don't think even in the environment we live in right now, people expect other people to be perfect, or at least not professional athletes, but it's when you are a professional athlete that has flaws and you still act like you're perfect and better than everybody else, then that's a little bit different. But Bobby Ryan, like you said, very honest and open, and even open and honest about the fact that he knew it was going to be difficult to be open and honest. But he knew that was part of his sort of recovery.
Yeah, this award, it's interesting. Every year, the Professional Hockey Writers Association reminds us that this is not always about overcoming personal tragedy. But that really is what this award has become. I almost feel like they should just concede and say, okay, dedication to the sport, what does that really mean anyway? Because a lot of guys do a lot for the sport. I don't know that you can vote on that unless you're really out in the community talking to a lot of people. I really feel like that's what this award has become. So we should all just embrace it. And when you get a story like this, I mean, who has a problem with Bobby Ryan winning the award for this?
No, nobody. Before we move on, please tell me that is a drawing of you on the wall behind you.
Yes, it is.
Nice.
And, from my days at the East Valley Tribune.
And please tell me you drew it.
No, I did not. Right. In fact, the former sports editor, Bob Romanek, had those commissioned for every one of the Tribune sports employees when the East Valley Tribune went under. Nice. He gave us those as party gifts.
Back to Vancouver here for a second. We talked about Thatcher Demko, who almost single-handedly won that series for them. It feels like Demko's only like 24, right? It feels like he's been their top goalie prospect since the early 70s, but still he's really young. He looked amazing, but as you said before, it's three games. Now it's three high pressure games, but we've seen goalies look great in the playoffs in the past and then not have that amazing career going forward. Not to say he won't, but they're in an interesting position now because they're going to have a hard time affording Jacob Markstrom anyway. So do you keep Markstrom and Demko, or do you feel like, okay, we can save some money and just go with Demko?
It sounds like they want to keep Markstrom from everything that I've read thus far. So, and I think that's a wise move. Look, you need two goalies. We know this. We've seen this in Arizona. You need two starting caliber goalies on your roster. So to throw all the eggs in the Thatcher Demko basket off three playoff games, to me, is crazy. Markstrom had a good season. There's nothing wrong with the season he had. I thought he was a little spotty in the postseason, but by and large, he's been a good goaltender. So that makes a lot of sense to me. But as we mentioned before, if they do that, they're going to have to make some other tough roster decisions because they have some bad contracts. I leaned in for that, by the way.
Well, sorry, listeners know.
Yeah,
That was excellent. Yeah. Well, we'll just.
Did you mute me? You did.
I did not mute you. No, okay. I absolutely not. I would never do such a thing. Hold on, let me just mute you real quick. Can we mute other people? I thought I could only mute myself. This changes the entire ball game here. In terms of a guy like Markstrom potentially being available or whatever Vegas is going to do in net, you know, just to tie it back into the Coyotes, I know there's been talk that they may at least explore dealing Darcy Kuemper. It doesn't mean they're going to, but that is a whole podcast in and of itself if that actually happens.
Yes, it is.
If it's me, if I'm the next GM of the team, which by the way hasn't been ruled out, I'm not.
I think it has actually.
But
you know.
You didn't tweet out that it had been rolled out, though, so I don't buy it.
That's true. All right, go ahead.
I'm not dealing Darcy Kuemper unless I'm getting a massive return for him because, you know, I understand he makes some money, but it's not like he's making Carey Price money or it's not like you're paying a ton of money to Kuemper. So to me, dealing him, if it comes to that, is to get a bunch of pieces back because you don't have draft picks coming up and you need maybe some – hopefully something up the middle.
Yeah.
If you have these other goalies out there on the market, doesn't that bring down the potential return for him?
And it depends on who's on the market, right? Because now there's talk that Vegas wants to re-sign Robin Leonard. If Vancouver brings back Jacob Markstrom as well, who's really on the market? You've got Braden Holtby, maybe. Matt Murray could be on the market, but he's an RFA, right?
Well, they're going to trade either him or Jari, apparently.
Yeah. So, when you take those two names that I just mentioned out of the mix, that diminishes the market somewhat, doesn't it? Now, I think Antti Raanta could be traded as well, but I do think that diminishes the market a little bit if you're taking those two guys out. But even so, with a guy like Darcy Kuemper, on another team, he has a potential to be a Vezina Trophy winner, maybe a Hart Trophy winner. So he's your most tradable asset. He's on a friendly contract. I still think that he rockets to the top of the list for any team looking to acquire a goaltender. Now, what do you need to get in return? If the Coyotes are looking just to shed money, that's a problem because you can't trade a guy like Darcy Kuemper and just get picks in return. To me, that is a failed trade if you're only looking at acquiring draft picks. You need a core piece. You need a top six center or a top four defenseman if you're going to trade Darcy Kuemper and then something else.
I'm with you. You should be able to get a legit number two, no questions asked center. Or honestly, I think you should be able to get a center that, you know, probably isn't a true number one around the league necessarily, but is your clear number one. I should say isn't considered like an elite number one. It's not a Mark Scheifele or somebody that, but you should be able to get in return a center that is your clear number one every night you go out there as the Coyotes. He should immediately jump to the top of your list. So I guess the long and short of it here and the takeaway is if you're a Coyotes fan, you want Vancouver to keep Markstrom. You want Vegas to keep Robin Leonard. Leonard especially is the one where, you know, Pittsburgh, one of their goalies is available in trade. Holtby's going to be available as a free agent. But Leonard's the only guy I really think that teams might look at on a similar level as Darcy Kuemper. I mean, if Leonard goes and wins the Stanley Cup this year and he's the starting goalie and he's pitching shutouts, nobody's getting into a bidding war for Kuemper if they can just go out and sign Leonard. That's the problem.
Yeah, but as Jesse Granger pointed out, it really looks like Vegas is making a hard push to re-sign him. So, and I think he'll want to be there. Obviously, that's a team that's going to have a lot of success. I think a lot of NHL players like living in Las Vegas anyway. So, I think they've got a good chance of bringing him back.
Do you think there's any sort of limitations if you're going to trade a guy like Kuemper, just in terms of teams that would be willing to go after him? I mean, what I'm thinking is if a team's going to go out there and trade for Kuemper, they need to be a contender with Stanley Cup aspirations that also doesn't have a good goalie. So that really limits to like Calgary, Colorado, maybe. I mean, a lot of teams that are successful already have a good goalie.
It depends on how you view your goaltending. I mean, do you look at your goaltending and say, yeah, we've got a good option, but not a great option. I think that opens it up even more. And then when you look at Darcy Kuemper's contract situation, I mean, it's pretty easy to roll that into your cap structure. I think he's making his cap number is 4.5. So, and that's for two more years. So you like the fact that you've got him signed for two more years. That's not a bad situation to roll into your cap structure for an elite goaltender.
Yeah. But I'm very much with you. I don't want to see, hey, Kuemper got traded to Colorado for the 25th pick in the draft. Like
that'd be awful. Yeah. If you're trading him like in your best, the best asset you acquire is a mid to late first round pick. That is an epic failure of a trade.
that's basically like trading in your car for like scratch tickets from the grocery store. Not even a Powerball ticket, just scratch tickets. Let's get into the four teams that are left: Tampa Bay and the Islanders. And we kind of alluded to this earlier. There's a very real scenario where Tampa Bay is just light years ahead of 95% of the league. And look, game two against the Islanders came down to a last second shot by Nikita Kucherov, but game one, that was scary. If you don't like Tampa, they put up 8 goals on a team built on not giving up any goals.
Yeah. And I know Barry Trotz is saying what a coach has to say, that this series is not far from flipping. If Braden Point isn't playing, that's something to consider, because he has been a huge piece for Tampa. And obviously Steven Stamkos, as we mentioned already, is not in the lineup. So that's two big pieces that you would take out. I know Stamkos hasn't played at all, but Braden Point has been fantastic. Alex Killorn is going to miss the next game because of a suspension. So you could see the Islanders winning the next game, but man, that last game, when they scored the way they scored, it just felt like a knockout punch in game two. New York needed to win that game. Are you really expecting the Islanders to win 4 of 5 from Tampa? I just can't see it.
Not at this point either. This is something we talked about at the beginning of this tournament. You look at, you know, we said anything could happen in the qualifying round. And to a certain extent, maybe that would even carry over into the first round because these teams have had so much time off. But in terms of getting to the Stanley Cup, it's really tough to be a team that wins 4 series that would normally win you the Stanley Cup just to get to the Stanley Cup. And you look at the 4 teams that are left right now, the Islanders are the only team that had to play that additional round. Dallas, Vegas, Tampa all had a bye and throughout the qualifying round. They just played round robin. I mean, Tampa's doing what a Stanley Cup winner should do, in the sense that they delivered that just brutal knockout punch to the Islanders in game two with the late goal. They exercised a lot of demons against Columbus by winning in the 5th overtime of game one. I have all the respect in the world for the Islanders coming into these playoffs. I mainly had all the respect in the world for Barry Trotz and Matthew Barzal, but watching that team go through, you know, Florida pretty easily, but Philadelphia, Washington, I don't see them winning 4 out of 5 from Tampa, to answer your question. I don't think anybody at this point can win 4 out of 5 against Tampa.
Yeah, and we said this at the start of the series. This is the time when Cinderella's coach turns back into a pumpkin. The Islanders were a great story, but they're not a Stanley Cup finalist. And secondly, when you watch Tampa now, and I know we all expected this last season, the offseason or the moves they made in season to add more grit, that has allowed this team to play a different style than it could play last year. And I think it completed this team. This is a really good roster. Even without Steven Stamkos, this is a really good roster and certainly a cup-worthy roster.
Yeah, very smart moves, because, and I know we said this last week, like you mentioned there, but nothing that completely alters their team, but they went out and got stuff they didn't have. That's a fine line to walk, to say, okay, we need this, but we're not adding it in such a way where we have to change how we play. They got guys that fit in very seamlessly, which in some ways is probably even more impressive considering they had 4.5 months before the actual playoffs started. I do want to mention Stamkos. I know we touched on it earlier, but I mean, this guy, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who watches hockey pretty consistently in the playoffs. He doesn't watch a lot during the regular season, but he brought up, like, you know, how good is Steven Stamkos? How good would Tampa be if they had Stamkos? And to me, if they had a healthy Stamkos right now, nobody's beating them. But Stamkos, I mean, this guy scored 65 goals in a season earlier in his career. To me, he was a Hall of Famer if he could stay healthy. And he just can't get on the ice.
Yeah, it would be sad to me. I'm sure he'll still celebrate if they win the cup, but imagine missing this after all he's done for this franchise. It's a sad story. It really is. But speaking of Tampa's additions, can we talk about Barkley Goudreau's hit on Brock Nelson from behind that apparently no one's paying any attention to at the league office? I mean, Alex Killorn got suspended for his play, but Barkley Goudreau cross-checked Brock Nelson in the back of the head, cross-checked his head into the glass, and Brock Nelson went down and was clearly woozy after that. And nothing? Are you kidding me? Yeah, nothing?
That was weird. It has been a strange run for the Department of Player Safety since the return here, because we were all talking on a text thread when Ryan Reeves got the suspension. I can't remember who he hit. Was it Jason Mott that he hit in the head? I don't remember who it was now on a Tyler Mott. I don't know who it was.
Tyler Mott, yeah.
I think Jason Mott's a baseball player. That was Jamie speaking through me for a second.
I think I did that a couple weeks ago, didn't I? I added a different first name for someone.
Lex Tuck. Remember Lex Tuck?
That was just a typo in my notes, but I actually think I said someone's name incorrectly 2 weeks ago. But
usually we highlight that on this show. Yeah. But I understand why Reeves got the 5-minute major and the suspension and everything, but to me, and the hit on Nick Schmaltz was so much worse than that hit in the Vancouver, because at least the Vancouver one, you could make a case like, okay, hey, Reeves is going full speed. He does turn away at the last second. He still hits the guy. So I understand why there's the penalty and everything. I'm not saying he didn't deserve all that, but you know, you and I were the same way with the hit on Schmaltz. When it first happened, it was kind of like, yeah, maybe that's bad. I had to see like 5 angles before I saw the
reverse angle.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it was
that
like,
was the one. That's the one where you're like, really? So the elbow, the flying elbow was unavoidable. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it came away from his body. That was absurd. That was an absurd call.
We're calling this episode the flying elbow, just for the record. I'm writing that down right now.
There it is.
Anything else on Tampa and the Islanders? We figure this series is done. No, all respect to the Islanders, but we figure this is pretty much done.
I think the Islanders could win Game 3 with the Lightning being shorthanded, but I can't see this series going beyond 6 at the most, probably 5.
Now, to be fair, we have seen Tampa get into the Eastern Conference Final before and then just completely quit.
Oh, there it is. Go ahead and bring that up.
But, yeah, I don't think that's happening this year. They seem to have once they broke through against Columbus, that seemed to be all they needed. The team they will play if they get to the Cup is very much up in the air between Vegas and Dallas. Back-to-back shutouts, one for Dallas in Game 1, one for Vegas in Game 2. Vegas had a run there where they had scored one goal against an actual goalie in like 3.5 games. They finally broke through that in Game 2 against Dallas. But this has the potential to be a very fun and all the way to Game 7 series.
Yeah, no question. I think it's going to be it could change, but I think it's going to be the same kind of hockey that we've seen so far. Very tight checking, low scoring, which is more of Dallas. This is more of the Dallas that we expected to see, right?
Yeah.
I don't know where that offense came from for the first couple of rounds, but they seem to be back to what we expected. But they can win a game like this. They can play this style and win, especially if Miro Heiskanen is going to keep playing like he's playing. I know I said this in the past podcast, but Miro Heiskanen is a better player right now than Quinn Hughes or Cale Makar. He's such a complete player. He, as I said in the last one, he impacts the game so many ways, away from the puck as well as with the puck.
I not only agree, I'd go one step further and say he's a better player than most defensemen in the NHL right now. I mean, there's he hasn't hit the level of Victor Hedman or some of those other guys that are perpetually great and have the right amount of experience, but there's not a lot of defensemen I would take if we were drafting teams right now over Heiskanen. There really isn't, especially when you consider his age.
Who else would you put in that argument? Like maybe Seth Jones would be a guy that you'd put in that argument. But beyond that, I don't know. I don't know if there's another guy out there.
They're really. If you're talking about like 25 and under guys, they're really at the play defense. No, yeah. I think Heiskanen would be right there at the top or second on that list. You mentioned another defenseman. He's not on Heiskanen's level, but another defenseman in this series. Shea Theodore, I mean, the knock on Vegas, if there has been one since they came into the league, is that their defense isn't all that great. But Shea Theodore is looking pretty great.
He's really emerging in this series. I love how the playoffs do this sometimes, too, where a player that you thought was good, but, you didn't think he was elite, suddenly emerges as one of the better players of the NHL. That's a great development for Vegas that he's becoming this kind of player. And we've talked so much about the teams that helped Vegas in the expansion draft. Florida, obviously, Columbus and Minnesota. But now you wonder, did Anaheim give them the best piece of all in Shea Theodore?
They may have given them their most important piece. I guess Pittsburgh with Fleury, although Fleury's not playing right now. But I at least remember when that was all going on, Anaheim didn't want to give up Theodore. They had a lot of defensemen. There was only so many guys you could protect. They had guys with the no movement clauses that they had to protect. Whereas Minnesota and Florida just didn't even seem to value the players they gave up. But Theodore wasn't this guy the first couple of years in Vegas. He has definitely been a major game changer for them. Joel Kiviranta, who had the game winner in Game 7 against Colorado. What a game that was. Look, I follow hockey pretty closely. There aren't many players I don't know a whole lot about. I didn't know a whole lot about Joel Kiviranta coming into this season. Yes. And now he's a playoff hero.
You are not alone. You are not alone. That was again, that's what the playoff script will do sometimes. These heroes that come out of nowhere. And that's, it's just one of many things that I love about the NHL playoffs.
I know I had Vegas in seven in this series. I think, did we all have Vegas in seven, or Jamie said he may have had Vegas in six?
I got to go back and look at his, but we all took Vegas, and yeah, you and I definitely had him in seven.
Okay. Let's get into some of these listener questions. Do you have anything else on that series before we hit listener questions?
I'm good.
Okay. All right. So let's see. I almost just deleted the entire podcast. Instead of doing that, I'm going to read some of these questions. Seth, in October, I'll be doing my own Craig Morgan around the draft, driving for a vacation to Portland, Oregon. And his extensive travels and breweries or stops I should make on the way from Phoenix, specifically avoiding trash IPAs. I think part of that question's missing.
Where's he going?
He's going to Portland.
Portland, Oregon. So I don't know breweries in Portland. Portland is not an NHL stop. So I can't say that I have spent a lot of time in Portland, Oregon. You're going to have to go to someone else, Seth. I apologize.
He is driving, though. So is there anything along the way between here?
Oh, you know, that I-5 corridor in California is fascinating, isn't it?
There's a lot of
brown hills after brown hills after brown hills. It's one of the ugliest drives in the nation, which is amazing to say about California, which is one of the most beautiful states. But the I-5 is truly the ugliest part of the state.
You could take the Pacific Coast Highway. It'll take you like seven times as long, but at least you'll be driving along the coast.
So worth it, yeah. It's so worth it.
On the bright side, Seth, Portland is basically built on IP or on breweries. So there's going to be a lot of IPAs. That's the problem, but you will find plenty of breweries once you get to Portland. Dangle Snipe Belly, top three realistic Jamie replacements. Well, I guess Pierre Maguire is available at this point. He will not be on the list.
I'll take an iced coffee.
Yeah. Definitely napkin Jamie. I think at this point is at the top of the list. He hasn't gotten a second interview yet. Worst day of the week.
No, I mean, for me, it's Monday. It's always Monday.
Yeah, I feel like Monday is the answer that they want us to get.
I mean, lately, it's hard to tell because they all just blend together. They all feel the same during COVID. But generally, you know, the day you got to go back after the weekend it's a rough day.
I think there's some level of frustration, too, with Fridays right now because, you know, a COVID Monday sort of feels like a regular Monday. But a COVID Friday, you're like, I'm missing out on a Friday right here.
That's true. That's a good point.
So in normal times, yes, the answer is definitely Monday. And one more from Dangle Snipe Belly. Could you create a campaign slogan for your favorite food and share it with us, the food or the slogan, either or? Wow, I don't have one of those prepared, but I will say this, because Craig ate Canes on the podcast a couple weeks ago. I've never had Canes.
You've never had Canes?
I've never had Canes.
Wait, and you're a Sun Devil too, aren't you?
Yeah. How is that possible? It is my greatest shame, and I'm going to change it before the next episode we record. I'm going to go out. I don't like lines. And if you know anything about ASU, the line to get into Canes is all the way down University and like halfway to New Mexico. Mm-hmm. But I have located other Canes that don't have that line, so I'm going to try this week. That's my slogan. I'm going to try.
Okay, I'm going to try. Okay, because I had nothing, actually, other than to say that I could eat sushi. It works every day.
well, we have a lot of food questions here. Okay. In this.
I like food questions. I'm getting hungry, though.
Coyote in Philly, have you guys been to Chiba Hut? You should go to Chiba Hut when you can. Well,
fun story here, actually. A good friend of mine owns a branding firm that represented Chiba Hut for a very long time. So not only did I go to Chiba Hut, I got some perks.
Oh, Chiba Hut is good too. There's nothing wrong
Chiba
with that.
Chiba Hut is good.
If you could give up one thing you like, love forever to make 2020 better for everyone, what would it be? This is from Booper.
Jamie Eisner.
Yeah, I was going to say Jamie Eisner, but it says like love. So I don't know. Napkin Jamie, maybe. I think we could replace Napkin Jamie with another napkin. Todd in Phoenix. What do you think of Clayton Keller's development as a player? I've drawn comparisons to Nathan MacKinnon, who started strong, had three down years, and then turned into a 90-plus point per season player, changed his diet, put on weight, started seeing a sports psychologist. Are the Coyotes offering or pushing any of this on Keller? Do you think his playoff performance is more of what's to come, or will we get 2 months into next season and have another ghost playing wing on the Coyotes' top line?
Ooh, that's a lot to digest. Let's start with the comparisons to Nathan MacKinnon, full stop. No, yeah. no comparisons there. Different body type, different player, different skill set. So no, I would not make that comparison. Anything other than maybe you hope for that sort of breakout after a quiet period. But Clayton Keller's offseason, I agree, he's got to get more physical. He's got to get more of a will to get to the net. And I know that's tough for a player of his size. I'm actually going to be writing about him very soon, so stay tuned.
Nice. Yeah, I would say, you know, in fairness to Keller, Nathan MacKinnon was the number one overall pick and is one of the two or three, if not the number one player in
maybe
the
best
right
player
now.
In the league. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is a fascinating question of what Clayton Keller's ceiling is or what sort of what player you want him to become realistically. And I don't want to draw the comparison based entirely on size, because I think that that's only one measurement. But at the same time, in the NHL in today's game, you know, he can't be a Nathan MacKinnon. He can't be one of these guys that can throw. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon just throws guys off of him when he's skating. I mean, ideally, yep. You're hoping Clayton Keller turns into a Johnny Gaudreau. And Johnny Gaudreau was a Hart Trophy finalist a couple years ago. So that's what you're hoping for.
Absolutely. But even if Clayton Keller is a 65-point guy, that's good enough. That would be satisfactory. That what he did, you know, over an entire season, if he could produce like he did his rookie season, which had great patches and bad patches, if he could do that, I think that would be good enough for his contract.
It's going to be interesting too with a new GM coming in. You know, we've seen this in the past. We saw it with Dylan Strome a lot. Like once you make that switch, it's kind of like at a certain point, you can't look at Dylan Strome as the third overall pick in a draft that has 75 Hall of Famers. You just have to look at him for who he is.
Right.
Clayton Keller's going to get measured against his contract because he's getting paid that. I continue to say you don't want to be in a position where Keller's supposed to be your best player. There's a big ceiling on how far your team can go if he's your best player, but he can be a very useful player. And like you said, 65 points, 70 points. I just want them spread out, though. I don't want 65 points in October where the Coyotes look dominant for a month and then he goes away for a while. Los Coyote Steve asked the question about this. I hadn't even seen this. Could someone clarify how Reeves earned a suspension for his hit against the Canucks when he gave virtually the identical hit against Schmaltz in the exhibition game? What am I missing? Well, Steve, we don't know what you're missing because we're missing it too.
Yeah, I can't clarify. I have no idea.
Wow, more food questions. Lisa, in your opinion, what is the best sandwich shop in the Phoenix area?
Now, we've already mentioned Chiba Hut, so I think that's on the list. I wouldn't call it necessarily a sandwich shop, but I really like Chompy's. Chompy's has some great sandwiches. Ooh. That's a good place to go.
Yeah.
Have you been to Ike's Lovin' Sandwiches too?
Yeah.
That's a great Ike's spot too. So those are some places on my list.
Ike's, just make sure. I mean, that's one of those places that has like 300 different sandwiches. And when you walk in, they're only going to have like 10 on the wall. So if you're going to Ike's, I would encourage you to look online at their full menu before you go in.
Just bring
it
in.
Yeah, just bring it. It's going to look like the Constitution if you carry it in. And DeFalco's. Have you been to DeFalco's?
Yes. On your recommendation, as a matter of fact.
So, look at that.
That's another good spot.
I was there with you that one time.
Yes, we were.
That was an interesting day. Let's see. Greg, this is the Greg who sent us the Natty Hattie bingo a while back, so he always gets his tweets read. Tampa Bay is going to need cap relief. Maybe OEL wants a change of scenery. OEL for Stamkos way off base fills a need for both teams. Salaries match. Both have no movement. Am I crazy?
I kind of think you're crazy because I don't trust Steven Stamkos' health anymore. I don't think you can make that move. You need to, if you're going to trade OEL, again, like Darcy Kuemper, and I know you got to move a contract, so it's a little bit different because OEL's contract is prohibitive, but I want a core piece that I'm sure can be a core piece, not one that's got the injury history that Steven Stamkos has.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I mean, if you had proposed that trade 3 years ago, I mean, there was a time when Steven Stamkos was one of the best players in the NHL, but you can't give up your captain if you're not getting back a surefire return. Cam Paul, who were the three worst NHL head coaches of this season?
Oh, man.
Wow, that's who is Detroit's coach? I can't even remember anymore. Is this still Jeff Blashill? I think it is. Whoever was coaching Detroit.
Is that even fair though, with what Detroit had?
It is if he has gotten to keep his job through all this. I mean, I never want anybody to lose their job, but yes, if he is
Willie Desjardins wasn't coaching somewhere, was he?
No.
Okay.
But I think he counts if he got within 100 yards of an NHL arena. You can go ahead and use him. Yeah, Jeff Blashill was still Detroit's coach.
Man, worst coaches? I don't know. It's such a hard thing because there's so many mitigating factors that you either are or not aware of that are going on with the team. I don't even know. I don't know what I would answer there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the guys that are coaching bad teams right now are kind of getting their first crack at this, so it's hard for me to pile on them. I guess we could pile on Mike Babcock since he lost his job with one of the most talented teams in the NHL midway through the season.
Yeah, and look what his replacement did.
It's the exact same thing.
Yep.
Bobby Big Wheel.
That's a good name.
It is.
I like Bobby Big Wheel. He should have his tweets read every week, too.
Okay, we'll move him to the top of the list.
AKA Tom J.
Yeah. I like Bobby Big Wheel better.
Me too.
How could a team coached by Rick Tocchet not have a single player that plays like Rick Tocchet? Would the Blues take Keller for Braden Schenn? Seems like that would be a symbiotic trade and solve the no Tocchet comps problem. That's interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, if St. Louis wants to get younger and they bring home a native, but are they giving up a center who's played very well for them? I don't know. For a wing?
Wing that always plays his best games in St. Louis, though. So you know you're going to get Pete Keller 41 games a year.
Oh, there's that. Maybe.
I think the first part of that
– go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
The first part of that question is really interesting of how could a team coached by Rick Tocchet not have a single player that plays like Rick Tocchet? I would – venture to guess that that's going to change here in the near future.
Yeah, I think that has more to do with the GM.
Yeah, and I would assume Tocchet probably has some input on the new GM, and that's probably going to be his input of, hey, you know, I had a lot of success playing this way. He had a lot of players like him when he was an assistant coach in Pittsburgh, too.
I'm not sure how much input he has on the new GM, actually.
No, really? Well, then maybe that won't change. Yeah. Los Coyote Steve asked another question that we already randomly answered. Los Coyote Steve might be moving up the list to replace Jamie. Non-linear donut ball delivery. I like this account. With the benefit of hindsight, do you think the Oilers or Flames won the Neil for Lucic trade? Also, what is your favorite donut you can get at Bosa Donuts? Wow.
You answer the first one. I'll answer the donut one.
Oh man! Well, I was gonna say Boston cream pie. I just want to throw that out there.
That's top three for me. Their buttermilk donuts are insane.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never had theirs.
Oh, you got to try those. But well, you know, prepare to just have an evening where you're just gonna lie on the couch afterward because that's all you can do.
Well, fortunately, they're open 24/7, no matter what's going on.
They really are. It's unfair. It's like you could be driving home at 3 a.m. Oh, Bosa's open. I could get one of those.
I can tell you, we were driving home at 1 a.m. on Christmas Eve, and we're like, yeah, let's get donuts to celebrate. And sure enough, they were open. And they've been open through all of this. The Neil for Lucic trade. Boy.
We going to call that a push?
You know, we can. I think I would have called it a win for Calgary until Lucic triggered that Dallas rally in that elimination game in the last round of the playoffs.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that's where we'll have to go with that. The Coach East Jack, we appreciate your question for the Mount Rushmore of fantasy football experts. We will try to save that for when Jamie's here because that definitely feels like a Jamie question. Michael, as much as everyone loves Hjalmarsson, could we see him on the trade block for a pick or piece? His contract's almost up, and if you're rebuilding anyway, you might as well throw Soderstrom in there.
Yes, teams are in love with Nick Hjalmarsson's brand of hockey. You always need a piece like that. Now, I didn't think he had a very good postseason, but that's a small sample, and we have seen what he can bring to this team in terms of suppressing shots, professionalism, all that. Yes, I think he could be on the block, and I do think he could bring a return. What that is for a player like that, I don't know at this point. I don't know what they'd be looking to acquire. I know they want to get back in the draft, but a lot of these players, you know, these veterans on one-year deals, I don't know that you can get more than a third or a second-round pick for them.
Last one here. We got two more, Craig. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Will the Rangers hiring of Martin really improve the Rangers' defense? I know the Rangers don't even have a competent first pair left defenseman, let alone depth.
Bingo! Lefty.
But you just answered your own question.
Really?
Maybe that's why you're the fantastic Mr. Fox and not just Mr. Fox.
Hey, you know, Tony D, I mean, he's something else. He's a great defenseman, isn't he?
Tony D, not on the list of replacements for Jamie.
He probably defends worse than Quinn Hughes, right?
Tony D, yes. Yeah. And look, I understand he had a good offensive season for the Rangers, and I know a lot of Rangers fans love him. But I'm going to need to see that for more than just this 1 year, and I'm going to need to see him play some defense with it. Not to say he shouldn't be playing, but I wouldn't expect him to be this amazing, and I would look deeper in the numbers, which it sounds like fantastic Mr. Fox already is. Yeah, I mean, the Rangers defense is – it's not terrible. They're a work in progress still.
That sounds like a tagline right there. The Rangers defense, it's not terrible.
I'm just, it's remarkable how quickly the Rangers have turned this around, but they still have some work on the
blue line.
Well, it's remarkable how quickly they've brought in some pieces for, they were supposed to be terrible for a while, starting like 2 years ago. Hmm. Okay. Last one. Murdoch. If you could own one famous movie prop, what are you going with?
One famous movie prop. Wow. Ooh. I didn't see this question earlier. I would have given this more thought. I like this question, but it
seems like a Craig Morgan question.
I got to start going through because you guys don't even watch movies, do you?
I mean, I've seen a couple.
A couple? I've seen a couple.
I haven't seen a lot of classic movies. I've seen Godfather, but like the ones that people are like, oh, you haven't seen, I don't know, Gone with the Wind or some of those other ones, Casablanca. No, I haven't seen any of those.
Gone with the Wind's overrated. Boy, I apologize, Murdoch. Nothing is coming to mind right away, but this is a good question. This is a very good question.
I've got one.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm not the world's biggest Star Wars fan, but
I thought you might say this. Okay. Go ahead. I want to know what you want from Star Wars.
I will take a full size Millennium Falcon in my driveway.
Okay. I would absolutely take that too, especially if it actually is operational.
Yeah. I think that's the best way to do it. Another food question from Murdoch. Where is the best Mexican food in Phoenix? Ooh, this is going to be controversial. I can tell you that right now.
You answer first.
I hesitate to say this because I don't want to leave anybody out. And I did not eat nearly as much Mexican food before I moved to Phoenix, but there are so many good options here that I'm not, by saying these two, I'm not ruling everybody else out. Julio's in Scottsdale is very good. Very underrated. Yeah. And Carolina's, they now have a few locations around the valley. When I first moved here, they only had like one or two. Carolina's tortillas, I didn't know it was possible to love a tortilla that much until I moved here.
You know what I really miss? Do you remember Verde that was downtown for a little while? I missed that place. That place was fantastic. You're right. There's so many choices. There's so many places in Scottsdale alone that are fantastic. But then when you talk about like pizza, I talk about convenience Mexican. There are a ton of great places too. I have a place right by my house called Juliano's that has fantastic food. I can walk there.
We've talked a lot about food on the show and I'm very hungry.
I'm starving.
And this is Murdoch who threw this out there. The Oats get their draft picks back, but they have to hire Pierre as GM. Are they game? Might be part of the poll question.
On a 1 month contract, yes.
Yeah, because otherwise he's going to trade those picks away for like an informational booklet on where everybody went to play junior hockey. All right, that's it. Craig, we actually got through all the questions, I believe.
That's pretty impressive.
You get some sort of award for this. All right, anything else here before we wrap up? Looking forward to this Vegas game, which is starting right now.
Indeed. I got nothing.
Okay, cool. All right, for Jamie Eisner when he was here, and we appreciate him leaving early to give us all a break from him. Sorry, Gilbert, Anthony, wherever you are. For Craig Morgan, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.
The next time we convene, we could have a Coyotes GM.